Welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
And once again, we are not alone. This time, we are so hyped to be joined by Queen of Criminy, Lucy Foley.
I love that. Thanks so much for having me.
That's okay. I don't know where I heard the word criminy. It was in like a film I watched and I was like, yes, that is how I'm going to refer to crime
Perfect.
From now on.
Perfect.
How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you. Yeah.
And we are here to chat about your new book, The Paris Apartment. So something that me and Alice are very terrible for is we often get like 20 minutes into an episode and realise we have not described or explained the book that we are here to talk about. So would you, as the author, like to give us a little nutshell of The Paris Apartment?
Yeah, sure. So The Paris Apartment is set in, surprise, surprise, a Parisian apartment, a beautiful old Parisian apartment. And Jess arrives to stay with her brother Ben, who's been living in this building. But when she turns up, Ben is missing and she begins to suspect that something must have happened to him and that possibly one of her new neighbours, so all the other people that live in this apartment building, has something to do with it. It's kind of a love letter to Paris. It's a murder mystery, a love letter to Paris, an exploration of the grime beneath the guilt, and also kind of a love letter to a time outside COVID of crowded metro carriages and bars and people touching each other, and had a lot of fun writing it.
That cool, was honestly yeah. One of the things that I loved most about spending time in this book was I felt like I was spending time in Paris as well.
Amazing.
Felt like being on
smell
holiday.
Smell the cigarette smoke.
Yeah, taste the coffee.
Yeah.
The tear Feel, gas.
The tear
yeah,
gas.
The vague stress of not knowing where the fuck you are.
Yes.
So my first question for you is, in your opinion, what are the key ingredients for a murder mystery?
Oh, great question. I think location. I kind of start with location as a writer. I want it to be like a character in the novel. So in this book, hopefully it feels quite gothic. The apartment building is like this sort of, I describe it as like going into the belly of the beast. So it's almost like this animal, this kind of other presence. So that's a big one. Then the character. I think plot is obviously so important, but I think plot should feel driven by character and their choices. And then of course we come to the plot, and you want it to feel kind of like a puzzle box, with lots of sort of surprises for the reader, but also to have a feeling that when they get to the end of the book, if they were to go back and read it again, they would see all the breadcrumbs that you've left for them as the author, so they would be able to solve it themselves.
That feeling of everything falling perfectly into place.
Exactly, which yeah. is immense. I find immensely satisfying as a reader. So,
yeah,
hopefully.
And how did you approach writing it? Are you, I guess for a novel like this and your previous thrillers, plotting is going to be quite important. You don't just kind of splurge it out.
No, but I'm naturally a really disorganized person, so I have to kind of try and rein myself in and plot really carefully beforehand. And I do try, and I do a lot of plotting, but there comes a point where I'm like, I'm just really bored of this, I want to start writing. And it's always probably a little bit too early, but I get to a point where I'm like, I have to just get words on the page and write my way into this. So I always do that. And also at the point at which I start writing, all of this beautiful plotting that I've put in place starts to kind of shift and things start to go a bit wrong. But when I say wrong, I mean, you know, you just realise that a character wouldn't behave in that way, or actually you've got a better way of doing things. And I think actually that's where the really exciting creative stuff happens, and you have to leave room for that in your plotting. And in all three thrillers, the identity of the murderer has changed. So that's quite a big change.
That's huge.
I think. Yeah.
So, yeah, I love this kind of thing. So was the murdered always consistent? So the victim, you knew
yes.
who the victim was going to be.
Yes.
But
always
you have shifted.
Yeah.
Of course, because that's something that you don't necessarily, in most murder mysteries, you start off knowing who has been murdered. But
yes.
that's something you're quite slippery with.
Played around with that a bit. Yeah.
Wily fox. Yeah. I love it. Also, what I love about that is I never would have expected you not to be a meticulous plotter. Do you know what
yes.
I mean? That's really surprising.
I've covered my tracks.
I just think, for the kind of books that you write, because they are so kind of like tight and specific and, you know, very set group of characters, set location, I would expect you to be really like tight.
Well, I suppose there's a lot of like going back and dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure I've kind of tied everything up properly. I probably create a lot more work for myself by not, you know, completely perfectly plotting everything out beforehand, but I'm probably quite a wasteful writer. You know, I write a lot that kind of hits the cutting room floor. But for me, across 6 books, I've realised that's the only way I can do things. And I've made my peace with that.
Yeah, and I think like once you find your way, there is no point trying to talk yourself out of being the way you are.
No.
The person that you know
that's
in your heart.
Said, every time I do an event with other authors and they talk about their craft and their process, I'm like, oh, I'm doing it all wrong. I'm not a proper author. Like, I should be doing it. You know, that sounds so much better and more sane.
I feel like something's obviously going right, though.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, so with all this said about Paris and the apartment and then characters and plotting, for the Paris apartment, what actually came first? The setting, the concept, or the location? Or the characters, I meant to say.
Really interesting question, because it's actually quite hard to remember this, because I think two things almost happened simultaneously. So I had the idea for the kind of basic premise, which was Jess turning up to find her brother was missing. And I very clearly wanted it to be a kind of twist on the missing girl. I wanted it to be a missing boy and a girl searching for him. And so there was that. And almost around the same time, I was working on the final draft of the guest list. And what I like to do is, rather than go on like a specific writing retreat, I like to book myself a cheap Airbnb somewhere and go and work there for a week. Just free of distractions. And so I booked into this creepy old Parisian apartment building, and it was brilliantly retro, this apartment. It sort of, nothing had changed for like 30 years, sort of preserved. And every morning and last thing at night, so I was sitting there all hours working my laptop, I would hear these strange sounds coming from the apartment building above me. So I would hear like something heavy being dragged across the floor. Maybe it was just furniture, or maybe someone was hiding a body. Anyway, I started to think, like, this is my setting for that idea that I've had. And, you know, there's a real tale here and I want to be the one to tell it.
So did you specifically go looking for a creepy apartment? Or was that just like, you
know? Specifically, but I was definitely drawn to it. So you could see in the pictures that it was quite retro and like nothing had changed. And I loved that. It had clearly like been in the family for ages. Maybe it was someone's grandmother's or something and they just hadn't changed anything. And that was brilliant. And I weirdly don't get too creeped out in those sort of situations. But like so many things about this building kind of have made it into the book wholesale. So just things like the kind of time-saving light switches. So you press them and then they're
so
kind of clicking down and then you're suddenly like plunged into darkness. Things like that. And then obviously there's a lot of artistic license in there. So I wanted to add, you know, secret staircases and
maids
kind of a basement
rooms
and maids rooms and all of that, which probably existed, but I didn't have the chance to actually go and explore.
That exact vibe and experience is why I have accepted that I can no longer stay in Airbnb whole apartments on my own. Because when I stayed in Edinburgh last year, I freaked myself out like every night. Like any time I heard like a noise, I was like, somebody's in the apartment. Even though I've locked the door, I don't know who is in here to begin with. Like someone was hiding in a cupboard. So I very much vibe with this experience of a creepy apartment building making your imagination run wild. So we know that Paris, your experience in Paris, sort of ignited the concept for this book, but how about the previous two? Were the places that you've set, the guest list and the hunting party, inspired by your actual travels?
They were, yeah, both times. The hunting party, the location, the whole book came out of the location. So it was traveling up to stay in this very remote bit of the Highlands and getting this kind of email beforehand, because it was January, I think, and it was already snowing actually as we were driving up. And they said, in the event of very heavy snowfall, you won't be able to leave this estate that you're staying on. It wasn't nearly as glamorous as the estate in the hunting party, but that kind of got me thinking, oh my God, this is the perfect setting for this kind of closed circle murder mystery where no one can escape, not even the killer. And then the guest list, funny enough, I had the idea for the wedding first and I wanted it to be somewhere remote, but I kind of wanted to initially I wanted to set it on a Greek island because I wanted it to be totally different and warm and sunny, so a real change from the hunting party. And I went on a research trip, which was very difficult, something you have to do as an author, but it just wasn't quite gelling. And I had this editorial chat with my editor and she was like, do you think it's because you've got a wedding and you've got a Greek island, and it's a bit Mamma Mia.
As soon as you said Greek island, I was like, okay, Mamma Mia. I was like, don't do an abbey.
Yeah.
Every time I kind of sit down to write, I'm basically hearing like Meryl Streep singing in my head. So then I was kind of in search of a location, and it was then traveling for actually my wedding anniversary to Connemara and getting the ferry to the boats off getting a ferry to the islands off Connemara that kind of gave me this location. It was perfect. It was kind of beautiful but really remote, like slightly hostile kind of nature, red in tooth and claw. I could just really see it all happening there.
And it does feel very, I mean, that's the thing, like all three books have very different locations, and even though in searching for like the polar opposite in Greece, it still felt like the guest list did have like such a different energy, because like the cozy snowiness of the hunting party gave it such a clear identity. And then it's the same with this one again, like it feels like such a fresh new angle.
Oh, thanks.
Something that I love about them. Okay, so a slightly different kind of question. All three books, but focusing on the Paris apartment, it has quite a big cast of characters. How does it work wrangling those characters, developing who they are and keeping their voices consistent?
Oh, so that's, I guess, something that happens across the different drafts. So it's always a question as an author, I think, of how much you've actually put on the page of what's in your head. So for me, from the very beginning, their voices are really distinct and really clear as I hear them in my head, which sounds a bit mad. Of course, that's not necessarily the case if you don't transmit that onto the page. So you have to make sure that you've got that kind of sense of voice on the page. And that really happens across several drafts, making sure that just the rhythms of the way they speak, you know, is distinct. And the words they use, just like often the swear words they use, like I find like the way people swear is quite revealing of character. So that's a kind of refining process and kind of adding more and more personality, I guess, into those points of views. But I love writing the peripheral characters as well. I love, there's a party in this book. I always love a party. And there are some characters that come up at that who I had such fun kind of adding in, because they're sort of the part of the texture of the book, and they give it this kind of personality, and often they demand more screen time, I think, on the page.
I was a particular fan. It's not just any old party, it's a Halloween party.
Yeah.
Which spoke to me.
Yeah, as a little goth.
So
Alice and I are both authors ourselves. So we are, even if our listeners at home are not, we are nerdishly interested in the authors that we speak to, their kind of writing process. Mm. So how do you write?
My stomach rumbling, clearly hungry. Do you want to do that one again?
That's fine.
No, go do it again if you'd prefer.
I don't mind, no, it's only because I made a thing about it. I don't mind my stomach, yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. Alice and I are both authors ourselves. And we are nerdishly very interested in the writing process of the authors that we talk to. So even if nobody at home is interested in how authors write, we want to know. So what is your kind of writing process, like both micro and macro, in terms of like how a book gets written, how long it takes you, and also like on a day-to-day basis, like how and where do you write? Tell us everything. We just love knowing this stuff.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated by this too. I'm never happier as a writer than when I'm with my notebook in a coffee shop somewhere, with like plenty of like buzz and chatter around me. That's kind of the dream, and that's like really where like the first draft is thrashed out of the book.
Handwritten,
because there's something like so freeing about just scribbling. I know I don't have to get it word perfect. I know actually that by scribbling it all down in a notebook, I will have to type it up. So it's almost like you get the first edit when you come to type that up.
Yeah, you're like automatically.
Sometimes my writing's terrible, yeah. So I literally can't read what I've written, which is a problem. That is me in my like real happy spot. And there's also something about it not feeling too much like work, like being surrounded by people. It's kind of inspiring. Obviously, during COVID, a lot of that hasn't been possible. So I had to sort of create a coffee shop environment for myself at home. So there's that. And then in terms of how long it takes, I mean, how long is a piece of string? The Paris apartment was a bit of a journey in that I started writing it in 2020, then and was pregnant. Got really, really pregnant, had this horrible like hip pain, was literally like, it was like painful to be sitting at my desk, right, literally like a pain writing. Got to the point where I realised that the baby was going to be delivered before the book and had to accept that I was going to have to put it aside for 6 months and come back to it. Honestly, I think the best thing I've ever done with a draft ever, because I came back to it 6 months later. I was quite nervous, you know, I was like, will my brain be working the same way? Like, oh, what's this going to be like? But I felt like I could see it so much more clearly, and I kind of almost rewrote the book from the beginning to the end. And some of the voices just that came to me so much more strongly. It's almost like I kind of lived with these characters in my head for that 6 months that I wasn't writing, and they had just kind of grown and grown as people for me. And Jess in particular, our protagonist, I just felt like I had a much clearer idea of who she was.
So it was like 6 months break of writing, but it was all still... The brain was still ticking over.
Totally. Like,
with a tiny baby as well.
Totally. Oh, and obviously, normally I wouldn't have time to do that, but this was kind of an enforced break, which was, yeah, the best thing ever.
So something that you kind of touched upon it very slightly earlier on, but something that our listeners may not know because we haven't really gone into it properly. Before The Hunting Party, you were a historical fiction writer. You have three other novels. So what made you decide to switch genre, and how did that feel? Was it scary? Was it something that you had to think carefully about, or was it just natural?
Yeah, really interesting question. I suppose the funny thing is, I think I came to writing as a reader with the kind of love of books, and I never really, in a way, kind of think about genre. Certainly when I'm picking books, I just want a really good story, well told. And when I'm writing, I just try and write the book that I, as a reader or as an editor, because I used to be a fiction editor, would want to discover. And so that was really how I came to write The Hunting Party. I travelled to this place, I had this idea, and I was like, I want to be the one to write this book. And so it was really a kind of side hustle. So there was no kind of pressure on the writing process, which was lovely. It was like sort of writing my debut again, because really it was a kind of another debut. I didn't tell anyone about it other than my agent, sort of a bit secret. When we then came to submit it, that was then really scary, because it was like, this is all new, all over again. Who knows how people respond to this? So it did feel quite sort of stark, but I'd loved writing the historicals, and I loved doing all the research and all of that, but there was something really refreshing about writing in this contemporary voice and like first person point of view, like quite confessional. I actually dictated quite a lot of it, like onto a dictation app on my phone, because it just felt like a really fresh way to do it, and it felt really easy. And I loved that, and I haven't kind of looked back since.
And did you consider writing under a different name?
Yes, we actually, when we first went out with it, we had this terrible pseudonym, which was Sarah, which is my middle name, LaFoy, which is just an anagram of my surname. So bad. We were literally talking about this yesterday. It's like embarrassing. Sarah LaFoy.
I would love to know about how you feel your experience as an editor informs what and how you write, if that's something that you have access to, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the funny thing is, I think I'd thought naively at the beginning that it would help me to kind of edit my own books. I think you're just too close to it as a writer. You can't see the wood for the trees. But I think what it has given me is like an understanding of the importance of that kind of editorial relationship and the importance of having a really good editor. And so much as I love like going and writing in my notebook and scribbling things down, that's not where the book's made. The book is made in that like grueling editing process, like several drafts, you know, my editor kind of really like wringing the best book possible out of me, and it's like painful and it's difficult, but it's so satisfying when it feels like you're getting it right.
And have you worked with the same editor on the three thrillers?
Yes, and actually the historicals as well. So cool. I'm really lucky to have had the same editor. We really know how each other work, and actually she likes to see the draft at quite an early stage and kind of get in there, and maybe other authors wouldn't enjoy that, but I like being able to kind of let her inside the mess in my head and have that, you know, it feels less lonely that way.
Let's name names. Who's your editor?
Kim Young.
Kim Young.
And she's fabulous.
Thank you, Kim.
Obviously, I have to say that, but she is fabulous.
Well, it sounds like she's fabulous if she can do like three historicals and then move on to like three thrillers, and you feel so, you know, happy with that relationship.
Totally. Totally. It feels very comfortable.
So, are there any particular authors or books that influence your work? I mean, obviously, you get, you often get compared to or referred to as like a modern Agatha Christie. But aside from Agatha, is there anyone else that inspires you?
Yeah, I mean, so going old school, Patricia Highsmith is a huge inspiration. So I feel like I've got my kind of three ladies, my three inspirations. So that's Agatha Christie, Patricia Highsmith, and Daphne du Maurier. Because I think for me, Rebecca is like one of those books I come back to time and again. And it's sort of the, like, the original psychological thriller, I think. And it's got that wonderful kind of gothic atmosphere, which in part inspired kind of the Paris apartment and going and staying in this beautiful old building. Also another kind of old school author would be Ethel Lena White, who's not as well known now, but she wrote this brilliant book called The Wheel Spins, which was then retitled The Lady Vanishes, which is like the original Girl on the Train. So it all takes place on this train hurtling across Europe. This woman disappears, and our protagonist knows that she's disappeared, but no one else will believe her, and she can't make herself even understood to a lot of people on this train because they all speak a different language. And I think that again, like, fed directly into the kind of inspirations behind the Paris apartment. Jess doesn't really speak the language, so she can't understand what people are saying around her. She can't kind of make herself fully understood, and that's a sort of, I think, an exciting premise for a thriller.
And of course, yeah, there's like, there is a parallel there with like, no one is really that concerned
either.
Like, no one really believes her
or leaps to her help and, you know,
gets even though like the circumstances, no spoilers, but the circumstances that she discovers her brother's missing. I mean, everything there is quite alarming. Like, I would be straight to red alert, right?
Totally.
And
I was going to say, and then kind of modern authors that inspire me are people like Louise Candlish, Erin Kelly, Lisa Jewell, Ellie Griffiths. I'm like an embarrassing Ellie Griffiths fan. I think my kind of inspirations come from reading, also from film and TV.
So in terms of, what is your relationship to Agatha Christie? Because we, you know, just we have done an episode on her, and then one of the reasons we were actually going to do an episode on your books anyway, even before Darling Amy, your publicist, offered us this interview with you, we were going to do a kind of modern day Agatha Christie vibes episode. Do you identify with that at all, or is this something that people have kind of projected onto you that you're not into?
No, I am so flattered to hear that. I mean, that is just amazing, because I kind of go back to my Agathas, you know, to kind of see how she done it. You know, I'm like, how, you know, that there's so little fat on her plotting, and I'm by nature a bit of a waffler. And you take a book like And Then There Were None, and it's just a kind of masterclass. And you've got all the information you need, but there's nothing kind of extraneous. It's fabulous. But I sort of first read Agatha Christie when I was probably a bit too young, so a kind of 12-13 year old, I think. And I loved them just for that sort of that puzzle box thing that I was talking about earlier, you know, that kind of satisfying, like, unpicking the puzzle, trying to guess, trying to see all the clues. When I came back to them as a kind of older reader, I think I realised how dark some of them are. And I think that's a common misconception of Agatha Christie, that because they're sort of, you know, this oldie-worldy setting, that they're cosy crime. And it can be a very cosy, oddly comforting experience, I think, reading them, because you know that everything is going to be solved for you at the end, and that's wonderfully satisfying. But also, there's a lot of really dark stuff going on there underneath the surface. And I think a book like And Then There Were None is a kind of real example of that. And that sort of adds an extra dimension to me.
This month I read Crooked House. Have you read that?
Oh my goodness.
That's so dark.
That's still, I feel like, almost taboo now.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, in terms of the principle.
No spoilers, but yeah, I was very taken aback by that book in terms of how old it is and what it does.
Totally.
Yeah, she's a queen.
Totally. And I think the amazing thing is that her books are still satisfying to reread, even if you know the solution, because you're sort of seeing how she did it. Certainly as a writer, yeah. I think there's that geeky fascination in that.
Well, that was definitely... I only read my first Agatha Christie this year. Really? Which is like a last wild year. Thing. Last year. I mean, it,
you know, late 2021.
Yeah.
Still in 2021 in my head.
Exactly. Like, I'm not quite ready to move on yet. But yeah, that's something that was just... It knocked me out. Was like... that process of reading it, as you said, like, they're so sparse, like, you're only given what you need. And so when it all comes together, I was like, fuck, did I even read this? I feel like I must have missed so much, because it all falls so neatly into place.
Totally.
I also think it's interesting, you said you felt like you started reading her books when you were slightly too young, because I did an event with HarperCollins and the Agatha Christie company, you know, her kind of estate, last year, and something that came up quite a lot, it was with Alex Michaelides and Sophie Hannah.
Brilliant.
And it was so interesting because it made me think about something that I had not considered before, and they both kind of mentioned it, which is that she's often the first adult author that children read, that it is this kind of gateway into adult reading. And I feel like it's a very high bar because they're so kind of high concept, and I don't know, I just feel like if they're the first thrillers you read, it can be kind of strange maybe to read others after that.
Yeah,
just in terms of how complex and, you know, how many pieces fit together.
Totally.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that she is, for many people, like the first grown-up.
That's fascinating. And that was my experience. Well, other than my Jilly Coopers. I think they probably came first.
You can read that at age 10.
So you mentioned very briefly at the end of the last question that you're very inspired by cinema and TV as well. I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
Oh gosh, yeah, I could talk about this for hours. But yeah, I think when I write, I write quite, it sounds very grand, but write quite cinematically. So I sort of see everything as though it were on a screen before me. And so I guess in writing this book, I was very inspired by kind of Hitchcock films, so particularly a film like Rear Window. In writing dialogue, I'm really inspired by shows like Succession. I just absolutely love the writing on that show. I think it's brilliant. So it all kind of feeds in there. Also, actually, funny enough, I was going to say it was inspired by Only Murders in the Building, but it wasn't. I'd finished writing the book and delivered it before watching that, but it was almost like I was glad that I hadn't seen it beforehand. But you know, something like that will kind of inspire me in the future, I think.
I loved Only Murders in the Building. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I don't even know what it is.
It's so funny. It's genuinely so one of the funniest things I've watched in ages. Martin Short, I laughed at every single thing he said.
Me too. He's but just it's like, joyful, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. It's murdery, but it's also funny. It's about murder podcasts. It's got Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez is a massive fan off the back of it. Yeah.
I haven't even heard of it. I'm such
it's
a
so
little...
good.
Wonderful.
Where can I watch it?
So I took out a Disney Plus
trial
so that I could watch it, and then I got sucked in, and now I have a Disney Plus subscription that I can't get rid of.
I'm exactly the same.
So I get a Disney Plus.
No, I have someone I mooch off. I have access.
Mooch Only Murders in the Building, because you will love it. It's so good. And then there's a new one that's on Apple TV called The After Party, which seems very much the same vibe, but I watched the first episode and I was it's got so many people in it that I love. It's got Ilana from Broad City. It's got Sam Richardson from I Think You Should Leave and other things. Loads of people that I love. But the vibes are just not right.
I was getting excited, I was like ready to write it down
It's not that funny, and I'm not invested in the mystery, whereas in Only Murders in the Building I feel like you were like loving it for the comedy, but you're also loving it for the mystery.
Totally, it's both.
So you've listed a few kind of authors that you love, but tell us more about we love giving recommendations on our pod, and we want to get some recommendations. Tell us about like crime writing that you're loving right now. What is something you've read recently that you want to tell us about?
So I literally like ran into a Waterstones yesterday to buy a copy of The Locked Room, which is the latest Ellie Griffiths book in her Ruth Galloway series. So I don't know if you've read any of those
books. So all the other authors that you mentioned are people that we or I or you read, but she is one that I have not, I'm aware of, but I haven't read. Tell us more.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I think it's book like number 13 or something in the series, but I read them in like an embarrassingly short amount of time, the whole series. And Ruth Galloway is a forensic archaeologist, so there is always a sort of either prehistoric or historical kind of crime or story alongside a kind of modern investigation. And so she works with the police, and they're set in Norfolk, so there's this wonderful sort of atmospheric setting where it's kind of all about the land and the sea and how the two kind of merge into each other, and it's very kind of brooding. But I also love, it's like the ultimate in kind of series writing, because the characters really grow across the series and you sort of fall in love with them, and you're like, oh. So there's like a druid called Cathbad, and at the beginning he's a sort of slightly sinister figure, but you come to absolutely love him, and you're like, oh, Cathbad is so funny. Just wonderful. And it's sort of, you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get this great plot, but also kind of revisit these characters that you've sort of fallen in love with. So that would be my kind of top recommendation at the moment. And I've also just bought the new Janice Hallett. So she wrote, oh my goodness, just totally gone out of my head, The Appeal. And this is called The Twyford Code. And both of them, I don't know if you've read them, but they're sort of murder mysteries, but told in a really interesting new format. So it's across kind of emails and WhatsApp messages from this community. And you're sort of trying to kind of unpick what's happened across those. So I'm really excited to start reading that one.
Cool.
They sound banging.
Yeah. Yeah, we're always in the market.
Thanks, for... like I wrote them.
Me approving really of your recommendations. Yeah. Like, who the fuck do I think I am?
But yeah, we are always in the market for like crime chat.
Can I tell you something alarming that's happened to me while we've been sat here? So for those listening, we're sat in a recording studio, which is very unusual for us. We're normally just at home on our separate laptops, but all together, and there is a window that shows like the
The
gadget room, yeah. You know, and all the lights out there went off. And if you've ever seen Urban Legend, in my head, I was like, there's going to be a murder.
And we're sort of trapped in here.
Yeah. I was like, right, well, this is it now. This is how we're going to go.
But publicist Amy is the one that's in the dark room.
She's well, maybe messing with
she's
us.
She's not.
Yeah, we don't know. She's
maybe she's just been so still that the lights went off.
Anyway, the Paris apartment timer
as far
lights.
As we know.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. If there's nothing else you want to declare, you want to tell us, anything that you feel like we haven't asked you that you love being asked.
No, I think that's been wonderful. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
Good.
We've had the time of our lives. Thank you so much.
So The Paris Apartment by you, Lucy Foley, is out now. And we recommend all of our lady listeners who love a bit of crime and, you know, non-ladies, but I just feel like we know who listens to us. You love a bit of crime, pick it up. Thank you so much, Lucy.
Thank you so much for having me. Loved it.
Bye! Bye.